Welcome to the Revenue Throughput Podcast, the show for B2B owners who are hungry for growth, stuck on a plateau, or just want better ways to deal with the everyday challenges of revenue growth. You'll hear from industry experts and fellow boots-on-the-ground business owners who will share their practical and powerful strategies for B2B business success. I'm your host, Jose Palomino, CEO of ValueProp and creator of the Revenue Throughput System. Now on to the show. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Revenue Throughput Podcast. Today's guest is John Livesay, and John is the pitch whisperer. He is an expert on helping sales professionals in the B2B environment use storytelling to their competitive advantage. Now, this is really gets into the nitty-gritty, which you know I love, of selling, how to do it more effectively, and how to gain a new superpower that might help you in your day-to-day selling activities or as you lead people who sell for you in your company. So without further ado, let's welcome John to the show. Welcome, John, to the Revenue Throughput Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Jose.
Well, John, we often get experts on this podcast who have a particular focus on sales and sales excellence. And I was very attracted to your approach. So why don't, just for context sake, tell us, you know, who do you primarily serve and what do you do for them? And I'll expand on, and our listeners will understand why I got excited that you agreed to be on the show.
Sure. Well, I typically get hired to be the keynote speaker at a big sales meeting for tech companies and healthcare companies. They are like Olympus Medical selling equipment to doctors and hospitals, B2B.
Gotcha.
And they have to compete against competitors. And their big struggle is tired of coming in second place. Their market share is not growing as fast as they want. And so I come in and teach them how to tell stories, because whoever tells the best story is the one that wins the sale. Because when you tell a story, you tug at people's heartstrings, and that's what makes them open the purse strings. And most people think it's all about logic and information, and it's not. People buy emotionally, even a B2B sale. And when you tell stories, not only does it tug at heartstrings, it makes you memorable. For that second meeting, after they've heard all the pitches, then they can remember your story and share it with either other decision makers or other people about why they want to work with you.
Okay, so let's take a look at, everything you described are fairly technical sales, right? If you're talking about, you know, pharmaceuticals or medical equipment, things like that. So at some level, you know, I have to be a good salesperson. I have to run a good sales process. I have to overcome objections, and I have to have a good product with a good value proposition,
right? Yes.
So what's this story thing? Like, I'm there to do business. I'm not a Hallmark card. So what's the story there?
So the premise is, when you've obviously gotten past the initial RFP proposal, you're in the final two or three, and you've invited in either virtually or in person to come in and present. Mm-hmm. Tell us why we should pick you over and above what you put in the RFP, especially if there's a big dollar amount associated with it. That's really when the storytelling comes to life. We usually show boring case studies of other clients we've worked with, which is a bunch of facts and figures, and I turn it into a case study. So for example, in the medical situation, I ask them, what are you saying now? Well, this equipment makes the surgeries go 30% faster. Isn't it logical you should buy them? And I said, yeah, there's no story there. And you're asking them to do math in their head, and then they're... So instead, I ask a bunch of questions, and now the case story is, imagine how happy Dr. Higgins was at Long Beach Memorial using this equipment, and he could go out to the patient's family in the waiting room an hour earlier than expected. And if you've ever waited for someone you love to come out of surgery, you know every minute feels like an hour. And he put them out of their waiting misery and said, good news, the scope shows they don't have cancer. And then turned to the rep and said, you know, that's why I became a doctor, for moments like this. Now that rep tells that story to another doctor at another hospital, and here's the secret, Jose. The other doctor sees himself in the story and says, you know what? That's why I became a doctor. I want your equipment too. You're not the hero of the story. The doctor is. And when you learn how to tell a story consistently where someone sees themselves in that story, they want to go on the journey with you and you're no longer pushing out facts and figures or even feeling pushy.
So is it fair to say, John, that if you're in the running, you're one of two or three being considered?
Yes.
The buyer's already stipulating that probably all three could do the job.
Exactly.
So that's not the tiebreaker. It's not like we're going to find the one that can't do the job.
Yes.
Right.
Right. In fact, I went through this with an architecture firm. They were up for $1 billion renovation of the Pittsburgh airport.
The client said,
yes, listen, we're going to pick the firm we like the most because it's going to take 6 years to get this project done. And they called me and they said, we don't even know where to start. We usually just show our designs and our reputation and hope that's enough to win. Where do we start with likability? And I said, well, we're going to start with the team slide. That becomes the most important slide now. And they went, really? We were going to skip it if we ran out of time. And I said, so what are you going to say on the team slide? Oh, my name is Joe. I've been here 10 years. I said, no. Joe, what made you become an architect? Oh, when I was 11 years old, I played with Legos. Now I have a son that's 11. I still play with Legos. Great. Sue, where did you work before here? I was in the Israeli army. I said, okay. So you know about discipline and focus. And since you're in charge of making sure this thing comes on time and under budget, if they win, you're the perfect person. So those little stories not only made them memorable, but they said, oh, we like that group because it helped them. And then, of course, we also turned a case study into a case story. So the storytelling goes throughout the whole process.
So just I love the turn of phrase, and you used it before, going from a case study to a case story.
Yes.
And you humanize it by giving real-world examples of people in context. But I notice, for example, you mentioned the person who would handle logistics having a military background, for example, in that illustration. That also is a story that also has some logical value. In other words, it's not like just a nice story to know about this person, but it's connected to what I'm looking for, right?
Exactly.
Or the architect that says, I've always known I was going to be an architect since I was 11 years old and did my first model, whatever. I'd want an architect with some passion for the field as opposed to my father. Like, how many lawyers is, well, my dad said I was going to be a lawyer.
Fell into it. Yeah, right. I'm sort of stuck doing this. I have a mortgage to pay. Yeah, nobody wants that person.
That's funny. So, all right. So now, I guess the thought that comes to mind is the process or the work to get there, because a lot of what you're talking about here, John, runs a bit counter to how people are trained.
Mm.
It runs counter to what we normally expect to do. In fact, sometimes we're told, you got to be warm, but not too warm. Don't make it too personal. It's just business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially now that procurement has become so powerful in a lot of these large purchases.
Right.
They actually try to keep the human part out. So how do you get the human side in, and how would you advise somebody who's hearing this saying, this sounds like a good idea, but how would I get started? How would I even think about doing this?
Well, either, you know, when I give a talk or a workshop, they start to learn what the core elements of how to tell a good story. And that, remember, unless it's strictly the lowest bidder getting the work, there is a human element into it. And so when you can tell a story of how you made somebody in procurement look like a hero to their boss, now suddenly that person is in the story again, and they want to go on that journey. And a lot of it has to do with showing empathy, your ability to put yourself in the other person's shoes. Look, I know you're under a lot of pressure. You want to make the right decision. It reminds me of another client I had, and then you're off into a case story about that particular person and what made them want to hire you. And maybe you tell a story of your amazing service when something broke in the middle of the night. I did that with the architecture firm. You know, I said, one of the things we did with JetBlue at JFK 4 years ago was we had to rip up all the tiles in the middle of the night. And we had all of our vendors on call in case something went wrong. And sure enough, at 2 a.m, a fuse blew. The vendor was there in 20 minutes. We fixed it. And 1 minute before we had to fix everything so the stores could open on time, we got it all done. And now sales are up 15% after we've designed it, because we've designed a place that keeps people in the stores longer shopping because the experience is so pleasant. So instead of just saying we use critical thinking to anticipate problems, mm-hmm. I helped them craft a story that showed it instead of told it.
Okay, so a lot of showing versus telling.
Yes.
Which is, it's. I mean, I think once you hear that, you say, well, yeah, that makes sense. I think people are afraid of sounding silly or sounding trite or not knowing how to translate that. But what you pointed to was just remember a situation where you did what you want to tell them you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you just started the business yesterday,
right?
You never did you were never in the field. You have those stories, right? Most people have these stories if they're still in business and not in jail. They've done this successfully, before.
Well, the key is learning how to tell a great story every time, and that's what I train people on. Whether it's in my talk or my workshop or my online experience working with people, you know, there's four steps: the exposition, the who, what, where, when. Like you're a journalist. You need to paint the picture. You'll notice I gave details of Dr. Higgins 6 months ago, what hospital he was at. Suddenly, now we know where we are. Then the better you describe a problem, the second step of a good story, the more people think you might have their solution. Because if you're describing a problem of what someone's feeling or worried about, they feel like, oh, you understand us. And then your solution, mm-hmm. and here's the real secret to a great story, it's the resolution. What is life like after your solution? This is where most people do not include in their story. Imagine if the Wizard of Oz stopped after Dorothy got in the balloon and there wasn't that wonderful scene where she said, oh my God, there's no place like home. And I appreciate it. You know, that's the resolution to that classic story and why it works so well. And so our, you know, the classic resolution of the architecture firm was sales are up 15% a year after the design. So the story did not end when the stores opened on time after the construction work was done. And that difference is the difference between getting the yes and not getting the yes.
Right, because if you just tell them what you do, you know, we're going to do a motion and traffic study, and we're going to clock how many people come through, and then we'll come up with the design and so on. It's like, at that point, I'm not even listening. It sounds like words. You know, it sounds like the right words from an architect talking about the technical aspects of what they do. But pointing to something you did and then what happened makes me interested. So how can you do that for me?
Right? Exactly.
And describing the problem right before that, which is actually really saying, you get it. You get me. You understand.
Right.
Those things connect in a very powerful way. So I'm just trying to think, if somebody listening here is leading a small sales team, mm-hmm. right? So you talk in front of sometimes, you know, very large groups, major corporations. But B2B is B2B, and I've been around small sales team that still have to crack million-dollar sales and then some. How would I, as an owner, do you think, what are some best practices I could do to encourage this more so with my team? Like, what should I be listening for? What should I be trying to coach them? Because, again, you know, it's sometimes hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah. Well, the biggest mistake I see salespeople making, whether it's a small company or a big company, is they jump right into selling the product.
Okay.
And, you know, we know they're not supposed to talk about features, so maybe we've got some good people that are at least talking about benefits. But my whole premise is you have to start by selling yourself first.
Okay.
And you do that by your story of origin. Then you sell the company. And it doesn't, it's not this long 20 slide presentation on the company. It's the story about the company. What are the values of the company? What's the culture here? And does it fit the culture of the company of your potential client? Is there a fit? So sell yourself, sell the company, and then sell the product. And when you substitute the word sell with story, you got a whole, now you're telling your story, the company's story, and then the story of another client who used your product or service and how much better their life is. And how you're the Sherpa, you're not the hero of the story. So getting your team to realize the importance of a story and then teaching them how to tell a good story. And then here's the secret, sharing the stories within the 3 to 5 or however many salespeople you have. Because you want to think of your brain like a jukebox or a playlist. So instead of pulling out a song, you want to pull out a story and have multiple stories ready to go depending on who you're talking to. Because remember, the goal is to get them to see themselves in the story. So you need to have more than one story because you're going to have a whole wide variety of different kinds of people that you want to be able to tell a story that they see themselves in.
And you know what's really exciting about that too, John, is this. Is if I hire a brand new sales rep today, that person doesn't have any stories yet to tell in the context of my company. But if I share these success stories, these real life things that have happened over the last 10 years as part of our collective history, they can start telling that story too. It's still legitimate that they tell that story just because they weren't there when it happened.
Exactly.
And then the jukebox idea, I think, is saying that obviously there's not one story that covers every scenario.
Right.
So in the airport thing, it was very specifically about, let's say, profitability from retail operations.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a whole other architectural issue that has to do with, you know, operational efficiency and time on whatever. So very interesting how that would work. Now, one thing in our pre-conversation you touched on was turning an elevator pitch into an elevator story.
Yes.
And I like, if we just have a few minutes on that, I think that's a rich area for us to listen
well,
to.
Well, you know, everybody needs a good elevator pitch and few people have one. And the problem is they either think it's an invitation when someone says, hey, what do you do? Oh, I get to talk for 10 minutes and you bore people to death, or worse, confuse them with a bunch of acronyms. Your whole goal is to intrigue people enough to say, wow, Jose, that's interesting. Tell me more. So I convert it into an elevator story. And again, most people make the mistake of saying, I'm a lawyer, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a whatever. And then, but I have a whole format where you describe who you help first and what problem you solve for them before you even get into what it is you do. So once you know how so many salespeople struggle not to be seen as a commodity, I'm known as the pitch whisperer, and I come in and help the team learn how to tell stories, because after the presentation, who's ever told the best story gets the sale, and after working with me, they all become revenue rock stars. Now people go, oh, I totally get who you help, what problem you're solving. They're struggling not to be seen as a commodity. That's where my team is. And you're the pitch whisperer? That the whole goal. There's so many things in that little elevator story that people go, what's a pitch whisperer? I know horse whisperer. I know dog whisperer. It doesn't matter what I've said that intrigues people enough to go, well, I want to know more about that. Revenue rock star, that sounds great. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. That's good. So now what about the manager, the VP of sales, says, listen, I know my team. I've done the best I can to hire them, but they're on a bell curve of talent and natural ability. It sounds like this is a pretty high-end skill. I don't know if everybody has a high-end that skill set.
The good news is anyone can learn to become better at storytelling because there's a structure to it. I'm not asking anybody to become an opera singer at Carnegie Hall where you have to have, you know, talent and decades of experience. This is just constantly practicing your stories with each other and saying, oh, I think that could be better if I added this word, you know, like struggle to describe the problem, and fine tuning it. So storytelling is a skill that not only helps you in your career, but in your personal life too. So the better, you know, because everyone always makes time for a good story. So if you're having trouble getting, you know, a doctor, if you're in the med sales, to give you 5 minutes, but you're known as somebody who tells good stories, they'll make time for that. If you're the person that's pushing out facts and figures, I'm too busy. So the good news is you can learn how to tell a story because there is a structure, and with some fine tuning and group coaching, everyone gets better. And even if you think you're good at it, I can get you to a black belt level.
Okay.
Where you really are tugging at those heartstrings and people are seeing themselves in the story in a whole nother way.
Wow. So you can take, it's the classic, you can take anybody up a couple of notches, right?
Yes.
So they're already an 8, you can get them to a 10. They're 3, get them into like a productive storytelling capability.
And the goal is, then that directly mirrors the closings. If you're getting 10 qualified leads and only closing 2, once you get your black belt in storytelling, you'll start closing 5 to 6, if not more.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess the thought too here is, you know, practice. You talked about telling stories and practicing it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend that like a sales team actually have some, like I know they do role playing and stuff.
Yes.
Practice this in that context as well?
Exactly. Right. Because the role playing can feel fairly artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're like, I'm going to tell a story. Well, we tell stories, you know, it's in our DNA around the campfire when we lived in caves. You know, we tell stories at parties. So you're like, oh, and then your friends can say, wait a minute, you didn't give enough detail in the exposition. I don't know when this happened. Or who was it you were doing this with? I need their name and title.
Right.
And then your friends start giving you feedback. Oh, right, right, right. I have all that. I just forgot to put it in. Let me do it again. So it's refining the storytelling skills. And I had one client say, you know, my seven-year-old daughter says, tell me a story, Daddy. Don't read me one. And he's like, I had nowhere idea what to do. Now I do. I know how the structure of a story is, and I'm a better dad because of it. So those moments really make me happy.
Well, there's a story right there, John. Yeah. I love it. I love it. That's very good. And you know, one very quick point, because you've alluded to it, but I think it's worth just calling it out a little further, is this. Facts and figures, speeds and feeds, you know, features, benefits, all of that. Any major B2B company today has that on their website.
Yes.
Has that on endless YouTube videos. The buyer can get all that information, already has that information. That's mm-hmm. probably why you're even invited to be in the room in the first place, is they had
exactly.
that.
Exactly, yep.
But your point is, okay, that's table stakes.
The exactly. information
is there. So if I show up thinking that's how I bring value by giving you what you already read on the website, not a lot of extra value.
Exactly.
But if I help you visualize or really see what the impact or the implications is of making this choice, mm-hmm. I'm actually doing you a service as a customer. I'm helping you see what the end looks like from the beginning.
Yes, exactly. You're reverse engineering the whole experience for them. And that requires maybe a little research and certainly a lot of empathy. You know, the soft skills of listening and empathy and storytelling are what make you strong. Not the hard skills of I'm an architect, I'm a lawyer, I'm a whatever.
That's great. That's great. John Livesay, this has been a fantastic time for us to get into a topic that I don't think gets enough coverage, is this idea of the human side of selling. And it's actually the more effective side of selling because, you know, if companies could send robots out to sell, they would. But they can't. They still need people there. So mm-hmm. if somebody listening to this wanted to know more about you and your work, where should they go?
Well, I have a free gift for everyone listening. If you want a free script, just answer a few quiz questions, go to johnlivesay.com/free elevator story. And you'll put that in the show notes, you said. Or just go to my website, johnlivesay.com, and you'll see a link there that you can access this free elevator story script to get started. And if you can't remember any of that, just Google The Pitch Whisperer and my content shows up.
Oh, fantastic. John, this has been a great time together. Thank you for taking the time to meet with us on the Revenue Throughput Podcast. It's appreciated.
Thanks, Jose.